Package being delivered.
Hello out there on the internet. I am Matthew Galt, and this is Cyber. It's the first day of September when we're recording this. The heat is still here, but the summer will soon be over. We're here at the precipice of fall. I wanted to take a moment to reflect on one of the big stories that Motherboard covered this season: labor, strikes, and unions. Here to tell us all about it is Motherboard labor reporter Jules Roscoe. Jules, how are you doing today?
Hello, I am doing well. Thank you for having me on. You know, the last time I was here, I talked about pink sauce, so I'm very excited that I'm not talking about that today.
Oh my God, I completely... Was that this year? Was pink sauce this year?
No, it was last summer. I think it's been, like, a good year.
Whatever, did anything... Do you have any follow-up on pink sauce?
I tried it.
You tried it?
I got sent a free sample of pink sauce. It was orange.
Okay.
It tasted like ranch that had gone bad. And then because I'm not a huge fan of ranch myself, I had my roommate, who is a big fan of ranch, try it. And his response was, ugh. So that's the review.
Is it still being sold? Did anything ever come of any of that?
I think it is still on the Dave's Gourmet website. I unsubscribed from their emails, though.
That's fair. Let's get into some more serious topics.
Anyways.
Setting pink sauce aside.
Yes.
It's funny how quickly, like, a meme like that dies. In a month, we won't remember Gang Gang. Anyway. So you wrote a couple things recently that struck a chord with me. You know, longtime listeners may know that I'm in South Carolina. We just had a hurricane move through. It was fine. It was actually, it hit Florida and it hit the coast where Charleston is pretty bad. But where I'm at, like, it was mostly just rain, lost power the first day for a little bit, but it was all right. But, you wrote some stories about, some shenanigans that were going on with Instacart.
Yes. Shenanigans is a good word.
So what exactly happened here with Instacart and the hurricane?
Yeah, so for people who don't know what Instacart is, much like myself yesterday, Instacart is like Grubhub, but for groceries. So you can like get groceries delivered to you. And the thing that I wrote about was that Instacart suggested to people in South Carolina who were being affected by this hurricane, right, this storm, that, quote, bad weather equals good tips, which is... You know, an interesting metric suggestion to put out there when people are going through a hurricane. But it also was followed with a cloud raining emoji and a money bag emoji. So maybe that's also helpful.
So they were kind of telling everyone that you should go out in the hurricane. You can make a lot of money. So there's a...
Yeah.
Have you ever lived through like one of these natural disasters, like a hurricane or a tornado or anything?
Not a tornado, but I have experienced remnants of hurricanes. I grew up in Massachusetts, which is like right on the water. So we've gotten a lot of storms like that before. It's definitely not a time you want to be outside. And I think a lot of the local guidance was suggesting, you know, avoid all non-essential travel.
Yeah.
But Instacart was suggesting that they encourage customers to tip better with inclement weather. So when it's raining and, you know, hurricanes tend to cause more than rain. There are flash floods. There are storm surges. There are sometimes tornadoes, lightning storms. Like it is a pretty big deal to live through a hurricane. But the suggestion was that customers will probably tip you more if you go out and deliver their groceries during this hurricane. And according to a lot of posts on Reddit, people didn't tip that well anyway. So,
yeah, in my experience, people don't tend to tip very well on those apps at all.
Yeah.
So is there like, so there's panic buying during one of these storms, right? I certainly did it. It was one of the first things I did earlier this week, as I went to the grocery store. My wife was sick. So I went to the store and just loaded up on stuff so we could eat for a couple days. Things that you could cook on a hot plate, like on a gas hot plate if things went bad. So I imagine that there was a lot of Instacart panic buying being done. Did Instacart respond to you or say anything when you reached out to them?
They did, yeah. So as it turns out, Instacart did shut down, or they told me they shut down their operations in Florida and Georgia, which were obviously very heavily affected by the hurricane. But South Carolina, which, as you said, also got a decent chunk of it, didn't have any sort of shutdown. So there was some sort of safety metric, but one of the shoppers that I talked to said that it's kind of insensitive to suggest to people that they should go out and deliver groceries through a natural disaster.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. But they weren't the only ones that forced people onto the hurricane, right? Amazon also got on this.
Yes. In both hurricanes that we've experienced in the U.S. this month, actually, the one in California, which kind of downgraded a little bit, and the one in Florida. So Amazon suggested to delivery drivers that, or not suggested, required delivery drivers to come in, specifically in California, during the hurricane, which California is not built for heavy rain because it's not something they get very often. You know, they get earthquakes, so their infrastructure is earthquake resistant, earthquake designed to survive earthquakes. But it's not designed for major flooding and a lot of rain. So what you ended up with was roads being flooded completely and crumbling, mudslides everywhere, sewage water in the streets. It was really, really bad for California. But through this, Amazon had delivery drivers out and delivering packages, of course, with a more lenience on their completion rate so that they wouldn't get penalized if they didn't complete deliveries in a literal hurricane.
Well, that's nice of them. At least they gave them that.
Exactly. Specifically, one of the drivers that I talked to was working out of Palmdale, where that they actually did receive flooding and record rainfall for that area. So it's not like it was something that was just, some drizzling rain. It was a serious issue.
Yeah.
But Amazon had delivery drivers out, and they were told that they had to call a customer before they could call off a delivery. And you don't want to be out sitting in those conditions waiting for someone to pick up the phone.
I also can't imagine you're in the middle of inclement weather like that, and your phone rings and there's a van outside and it's the Amazon guy. Can I not do this? That's just so terrible to kind of put it on them. But being an Amazon driver sucks, as you've written about extensively. Another one of the stories that you hit are the cameras that are inside the vans.
Yes.
We've been reporting on that for a long time, but there's kind of a recent update that's kind of a we told you so. What's going on there?
So being an Amazon delivery driver has many perks. And one of those perks is an in-van camera that records constantly, both forward out onto the road and also inward facing the driver. So the driver is constantly being recorded by this camera, which is called Netradyne Driver Eye. And the really fun thing about this is that it's powered by AI. And the AI is tracking the driver's movements to monitor if they are running stop signs, for example, or making incorrect turns, or having issues with distracted driving. Now, what is distracted driving, you may ask? Well, drinking water, checking your route where you're supposed to be when you're parked on your phone, any sort of unspecified movement that's not moving the wheel of the truck, of the van, can count as distracted driving. And that's what this AI is monitoring all the time, which is great. When Amazon first started implementing these cameras to improve, safety, their guarantee, so to speak, was that these videos would not be shared anywhere, that they would just be used for safety purposes, and that if, the AI picks up on some kind of quote-unquote infraction, it would be sent to the driver's manager, their DSP manager, delivery service partner manager, which is how Amazon delivers its packages. And then that DSP manager would review the footage, determine if there is some sort of infraction, and then act accordingly. But what we've seen, and at the time that I wrote this story, which I think was late July, is that those videos, which Amazon guaranteed would be private, were getting leaked on Reddit, which is the least private place you can imagine for videos to be getting leaked. And just both videos of like the road in front of the driver with just innocuous commentary like, oh, look at this lady, she drove into a ditch, like that's really dumb. But it is still like a violation of privacy because those videos are not supposed to be public. There was another one of what the AI labeled as a stop sign infraction, which, you know, I'm not a wonderful driver, but I'm decent, and I don't think there was a stop sign infraction there. And there was actually one of a front-facing camera facing a driver who was pleasantly surprised when a little, like, French bulldog jumped into her van, which was a very cute video. It was very cute. But at the same time, it wasn't just, like, a screen recording. It was some recording on their phone, their screen at work. And what you can see there is that they're looking at this video that was probably sent to them by the Metrodyne driver eye camera on their monitor on a desk in a warehouse. And they and maybe four other people around them are talking about the video and like watching it, which is, you know, it's cute to share a dog. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, it's very strange and dystopian and uncomfortable that there are four or five people watching this person who was getting recorded by an AI camera. And then that got posted on Reddit.
Have we ever... I know I've talked about it on the show multiple times before. Have you and I ever talked about what one of the jobs was I did before I started doing this?
I don't think so.
I was a loss prevention manager for I wouldn't say high end, but like the beginning of high end clothing chain in Dallas, Fort Worth.
I would not have guessed that. Yeah, in a million years.
Yeah, I know. It was awful. It was probably the worst, most depressing job I have had, but. There was a lot of camera watching, and it's kind of its own little world, and like you end up interacting with the people that do that job, like all across the mall or all across the shopping center that you're at, and every single one of these people has their own private collection of shit that they have recorded off of the cameras that watch you while you shop. And there's a lot. There are cameras all over all of these stores. And there's weirdos watching everybody, and if something strange happens, someone probably noticed it, and maybe clipped it and took it home, and they share it with other people. There's like people falling down, people that look strange, big like thefts that they've seen. Like it's mm-hmm. It does not shock me that the minute these cameras went into these vans. That the footage instantly started going out. Not surprised.
When you were working in that job, like, how did you feel about watching people all the time?
I didn't last a year. The turnover in the job is pretty high. Mm. There was like a specific case is maybe a strong word, where I felt very bad about how it turned out, and I was like, I can't do this job anymore. And decided to quit. And I quit without having the next job lined up. It was that disturbing. Mm-hmm. But it's really weird because there's most people only last like 6 months to a year. And then there's people that do it basically their whole lives. And those people are like intense and weird and can't turn it off. There's a great character that we worked with all the time. I'll call him Jay. And Jay was former military police.
Oh, God. Okay. And, I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, and we would... I was still smoking cigarettes then. And we would sit outside and we would have a smoke break. It was great to work with Jay because he always knew... You were always going to see something wild. And we would sit outside and he would see someone just walk into the mall while we were smoking. And he'd be like, all right, smoke break's over. And he would just see something in this person, and we would follow them maybe an hour or two. And always, inevitably, they would steal something from somewhere. It was just like he had a sixth sense for it. And it may take a while, but he would get people like left and right. Flagrant weird, wild stuff too. Not like just somebody pocketing you know, suntan lotion walking out the door, like somebody that had come in and was going to steal a lot of stuff. He just knew. He had, like, been doing it so long. And so you had, like, it was guys like that, and then guys that were only going to be there 6 months and then wash out. Mm. So, yeah, it was a strange job. And it was very, depressing, because you do spend a lot of time, like, just watching these cameras, just watching people that don't know you're looking at them. And it's also a large part of the job, and they don't talk about this, I think people talk about loss prevention, and it's mostly about people, especially now, it's about, like, people coming in and robbing a location. What they don't talk about is that most of the job is watching the employees, and, like, catching the employees when they're stealing, or trying to figure out, like, it's, or, like, catching them for minor infractions for things, going through their, like, work lockers. It sucked. It was awful.
That reminds me, actually, of something that I believe happened, like, last fall, where Amazon hired a new loss prevention manager, or promoted, I suppose, and she just so happened to be a private prison manager at Core Civic, which I think is one of the largest private prison systems in the U.S. So, I mean, that, based on what you're saying, that tracks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that wanted to be police officers or wanted to be in law enforcement, and then for whatever reason couldn't, and so now they're making sure people don't steal from Walmart. There was, and you very imagine, like, people job. With that kind of attitude, it's bad. It's not good. So sorry, we kind of got sidetracked there. But
yes, my bad.
No, it's I think it's interesting to talk about, especially because, like, the loss prevention stuff is so in the news right now, because you're constantly seeing these viral videos of people stealing, like, whole shelves of things, and, like, I kind of want to talk about that, but that's, like, a whole tangent we won't get into right now. So back to Amazon, yes. Which you were trying to wrinkle us back to. Thank you. In another way, one of these, this van driving job is really terrible. What happened in Ohio?
Yeah. So in Ohio earlier this summer, an Amazon driver was shot by a guy he was delivering a package to. The package was delivered at, like, a little bit before 5 a.m. This driver was dropping off the package, and the guy in, it was in, like, Southwest Columbus. I don't know Ohio, but maybe that's relevant for anyone out there who knows Ohio. But in Southwest Columbus, and this guy came out of his house with a shotgun and shot at the driver with birdshot, which is a kind of shotgun shell that's, case in point, like, designed for shooting birds, hence the name. But the way that it works is that instead of having, like, one large pellet, it's like a bunch of small pellets in the cartridge that will scatter out when the cartridge gets shot for a better chance of hitting the bird, and also a better chance of not destroying it, so that if you're, you know, hunting, you can use it afterwards, eat it, whatever people do with birds that they hunt. I don't do that. So it's not a shot that's typically lethal to humans, but that does depend on the distance. But it was shot from a decent distance, and as far as I know, at the point that I was reporting on this, the Amazon driver is okay. They went home, they were recovering, and there was also damage to their vehicle, which is, again, like, this is a major safety issue. Obviously, it's not something that happens every day. Thankfully, you know, you don't want to be worried about getting shot while on the job, but also it is something that does happen, and that's something you have to consider when you're thinking about, you know, working as a delivery driver. You are going onto people's property to put stuff at their door. And if that person is perhaps not expecting a package at 5 a.m. or something like that, or you catch them off guard, they could very well perceive that as a threat. And that just opens up a whole realm of possibilities of, you know, safety issues when it comes to Amazon drivers. People, you know, will harass them if they get on the property or if they don't leave the package in the specified location. Amazon drivers get attacked by dogs all the time that are just loose in somebody's yard and will come over and, you know, jump on them and bite them. And there is a really big safety issue when it comes to drivers actually having to get out of their vans to deliver those packages. And that's not something that's, to my knowledge, again, really been addressed in Amazon's policies.
When the And UPS does this all the time. The Postal Service has been dealing with a lot of these issues for its entire run. But the difference is that the United States Postal Service employees are employees, and Amazon does not technically consider their drivers employees, yes, right?
They do not. They have been very clear about this point to me specifically. I can talk about this tangent now if you want.
Yeah, please. Because I think it's like we talk about these safety issues, and I want to make this distinction clear. I think it's important.
Yeah. So Amazon, the way that Amazon delivers packages, it has a network of delivery service partners, or DSPs, which are smaller third-party companies that it contracts to deliver packages out of its warehouse or out of its delivery station. Those DSPs employ their drivers. But Amazon does not employ those drivers. They're contracted through a third party. So they're not employees. But they wear Amazon uniforms and deliver Amazon packages in largely Amazon-branded vehicles. But they're not employees. And Amazon has been very clear about this to me. They asked me one time after I was writing a story about a group of Amazon delivery drivers who had unionized in California, which I'm sure we'll get into in a minute. Amazon wanted me to clarify that they're not Amazon delivery drivers. They're drivers delivering for Amazon, which is obviously a very important semantic difference.
Right.
If you want to distance yourself from claiming responsibility for people who are unionizing or are getting injured in your workforce.
Yeah, let's focus on this because I think there's kind of two stories here to kind of close out our time with Amazon. They're busting union. So what are the drivers doing here? They're trying to get organized. They're trying to get some unions going. So are the warehouse workers, obviously. Amazon is busting those unions, and also the National Labor Relations Board is going after them. Kind of what I know that's a lot of threads, but what's going on here?
So we can talk about let's set up the union busting first, because Amazon is getting critiqued from a lot of different angles because of that.
Okay.
The main thing that I think is relevant to bring up here, the drivers, there's a group of drivers in California that unionized with the Teamsters back in April, which was a really big deal because the Teamsters have been trying to organize Amazon for a very long time. They have an Amazon division, and it was really the first group of drivers in Amazon's, you know, network of delivery service partners who successfully unionized. That those drivers' employer, the DSP, recognized their union voluntarily, and they bargained a contract, and everything was great. But Amazon said, well, actually, because we don't employ these drivers, we don't have to bargain with them. Which is why it's so interesting that they spent over $1 million trying to bust driver unions in 2022.
Right. If it's not actually a problem, if these aren't our employees, then why spend the money? Why invest the money to make sure that you don't have to talk to them?
It's very strange. I did some digging through filings. So whenever a company wants to hire union busting consultants, who are usually called just regular consultants, and their job is to persuade employees to exercise or not exercise their right to unionize, usually in the favor of not, because unions make things difficult for employers who want to exploit their workers. Employers and those consultants are required to disclose their activities to the National Labor Relations Board in some forms that are publicly available. And I dug through some of those forms, and I found at least two groups of consultants were hired by Amazon specifically to target drivers, and specifically drivers who were unionizing with the Teamsters in 2022. It's worth mentioning that those drivers who unionized in California, over in Palmdale, actually, were, as soon as they announced their unionization publicly, they started seeing new faces around the warehouse, which is usually an interesting tell of someone trying to interfere. But I looked at the numbers that they had on those, that they filed on those NLRB documents, and Amazon spent over $1 million trying specifically to persuade drivers to not unionize with the Teamsters. Another interesting number I should bring up here is that that $1 million is part of a total of over $14.2 million that they spent on union busting in 2022.
Pocket change for them, really.
pocket change, some little coins. It's not a big deal at all.
God forbid they spend that money meeting some of the demands of the people that very obviously work for them.
Yeah.
And there's also been pickets at some of the warehouses.
There have, specifically by those Amazon Teamsters, I'll just call them shorthand, who unionized back in April. They have been holding picket lines because they claim that Amazon, because it's refused to bargain with them, is committing an unfair labor practice. And that is something that they have the right to strike against. So for a very long time, while they were still delivering packages for Amazon, they went on strike and they said, we're not delivering anything until you come to the table and bargain with us. Amazon also conveniently announced, and this is at a very convenient point indeed, because they said the same day that the unionization was announced, I reached out to Amazon and I asked, do you have any statement on this unionization? And they said, yes, these drivers don't work for us. Their contract was terminated because of poor performance. Uh-huh. 10 days before unionization was announced. So really, the argument was, in essence, that they don't work for us, and also we fired them before they could unionize, so we have no obligation to be bargaining with these people. I talked to the DSP owner, and he said that actually they had had wonderful performance, and he didn't know why their contract had been terminated. But again, it's very interesting timing, personal opinion. But after their contract was up, they had 60 days to continue because of the California WARN Act, which requires that you have to give a certain amount of time, like notice, before someone loses their job. And so during those 60 days, they were holding picket lines and refusing to work. After their contract ended, they have extended those picket lines quite literally across the country. There have been pickets and strikes all over California that they've held, Atlanta, New Jersey, Michigan, Massachusetts, Connecticut. There have been tons and tons of places where they've gathered solidarity from. You know, they've flown out across the country. They've had local union members, especially from the Teamsters, come in and support them, from UPS to come and support them. And they're really trying to bring attention to the fact that Amazon has refused to bargain with them, and how they say that Amazon has unjustly fired their, like, unrenewed their contract, gotten rid of their contract, specifically because of unionization. That's their argument.
All right, there, cyber listeners. We're going to pause there for a break. We'll be right back after this. All right.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cyber listeners, welcome back. I've got a question from chat here that I think is pretty good. The answer may be no, but it would be funny if it's yes. Are the Pinkertons involved with Amazon in any way? Is that one of the union busting? I know that they've been doing union busting other places.
Pinkerton.
They're
I don't know that name.
They are. So the Pinkertons are a detective agency that is usually portrayed as villainous in stories about the Old West. They're still around. They did union busting then. They do union busting now. The Pinkertons.
Oh,
yeah.
It just clicked. I have, unfortunately, I think the answer is no.
Sorry,
very
chat.
Unfortunately, that would be great. But to my knowledge, I don't think they are involved. We'll update you if that changes.
Somebody should do... I don't know if anyone's done like a big piece on like what the Pinkertons are doing now, but they're still involved other places and they're still around, still doing union busting. I think they did some union busting against there was a Magic the Gathering leak, and the company that, you know what Magic the Gathering is? It's a card game.
I do. Yes.
The company that owns Magic the Gathering, Wizards of the Coast, hired the Pinkertons to recover the property. They went to this poor YouTuber's house to like get him to hand over the cards that he had a month earlier than he was supposed to. Yeah.
Oh my god.
That was maybe the end of last year, I think that happened, or maybe the beginning of this year. So
that's so funny. I feel so bad, but that's also so funny.
It's just because like Pinkertons in my mind I think of as like villains from video games and movies, but they're still around, still doing nasty business. All right, so there's another half to this story. We're kind of in this unprecedented moment right now for labor, at least in my lifetime, where there is all this organization. People are more aware of unions, I think, than they've been in a long time. And people are fighting back against the kind of the way we've done business in this country maybe the past 20, 30 years. So I want to talk about one of the big wins recently, which, you know, we've talked about the Teamsters, but the Teamsters and UPS had a big win, right? There was almost a strike and they ended up negotiating something. Can you kind of walk me through that story?
Sure. So the Teamsters, UPS is like one of the giants in the logistics industry. So what they do with the Teamsters really affects pretty much everyone who wants to deliver packages in the United States and, you know, across around the world. And they had a really, really big strike threat this summer because the union contract between the UPS and the Teamsters was set to expire on August 1st. And the Teamsters have a new president, Sean O'Brien, who was in charge of those negotiations. And he took a much more aggressive stance to try and improve conditions for those UPS workers. Specifically, there were two major points that I want to touch on. The first one is heat protections, which we saw there was a massive heat wave last summer. There was a lot of heat this summer. And I think now in both summers, there have been UPS drivers who have died on the job because of heat. Because of heat stroke and being exposed to those extreme conditions. You know, the back of UPS trucks can get over 120 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's just a metal box. You're baking back there. And so obviously people wanted protections for that. And one of the initial big wins that we saw during these negotiations, during this back and forth, was that the Teamsters were able to win air conditioning in UPS trucks, which shockingly was not a thing before this summer.
That's so awful.
Isn't that crazy?
It's a nightmare, yeah.
The fact that you want to have workers out in the heat and the elements all day with just a fan that's maybe this big blowing sort of at their left elbow is what I've heard from some drivers. And to be doing, you know, hard manual labor, like these packages are heavy. And if you're lifting and moving and running around, you're doing like an 8-hour, 10-hour long workout in the heat. And there was no air conditioning. That was a really big win, the fact that they're now going to start implementing air conditioning in new trucks and also get heat exhaust shields, or exhaust heat shields. I think it's the other way around. The other big point was the elimination of a position that's known as the 22-4, which refers to the article and section number that it was defined in the previous union contract that was set for 5 years. And that position, in essence, was workers who would work full-time hours for part-time pay, which is obviously not a great solution. And so a lot of people wanted to get rid of that. And they did manage to get rid of that in tentative agreements. This is all back in like June. May and June when negotiations were, you know, in the thick of it. And then things came to a standstill over the issue of part-time wages. UPS is largely made up of part-timers, and they were not getting their fair share of the contract and their fair share of, you know, what they deserve for their work. And what happened was both UPS and the Teamsters accused each other of walking out of the bargaining room. And then nothing happened for a month. And that was when people were really starting to believe that there was going to be a strike, because there were no negotiations happening and the deadline was just growing closer and closer. And they had authorized a strike. The Teamsters had authorized a strike with, I think, 97% approval nationwide, which is pretty good. So finally, about a week before the contract was set to expire, they came back to the bargaining table. They were able to come to some kind of agreement, and those were some really tense days to watch things, you know, really go down to the wire. But they were able to form a tentative agreement that guarantees higher part-time wages, a better increase over a five-year period of what people will be getting paid, better pathways to become a full-time worker from being a part-timer, which is something that workers have wanted for a long time. And people were pretty happy about this. They had to authorize that agreement. So they had a vote nationwide, which I think had around 50% turnout of people who voted on it, people who were eligible to vote on it, and got, I think, around 86% approval. So that passed. We're not going to have a UPS strike this year, to my knowledge. But that was a really big win because they were able to get those three major points: air conditioning, no 22-4, no like weird part-time wages, and improvements for part-timers in general, which is something that they'd been fighting for a long time. And I feel like that really sets, that's one of the big wins that we've seen for labor this summer, this year as well. And I think that sets kind of a precedent for what kind of negotiations we may be seeing in the future, because I feel like people are taking a much more aggressive stance this year.
The other big story, the other big one I think everyone's kind of aware of and been following, obviously, is the writers and actors strike.
Yes.
Is there any, I know we've kind of been stalled out there for a long time. Is there any kind of update on that? Is anything interesting going on there?
They did actually have a new proposal that came in, I think, mid-August. So for people who somehow are not aware of this, writers and actors have been on strike for over 100 days now, I think, because they want better residuals from streaming, which is how most people in the entertainment industry earn their money. And streaming has really kind of messed that up. So they want a better deal for that, and better protections and regulations about how AI is going to get used in the entertainment industry. And for a long time, studios were like, no, we're not doing that. You can just be on strike until you starve and lose your house. I think there was one studio executive who said something like that.
Yes.
Crazy. But there was an update in those negotiations, which was that studios provided a new proposal with, I think, better residuals. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but meetings as well to determine, you know, viewership on streaming platforms to help calculate those residuals better so people can earn money off of streaming their shows instead of them just being on cable. And also that any content generated by AI, this is specifically for the writers, would not be considered literary material, which means that it would not be covered by any sort of bargaining agreement that the writers have. And so it would affect them less, and that way they would be able to kind of distance themselves from being lumped in with AI, which is an improvement because that's something that writers have been working towards, getting better protections for how AI is used in conjunction with their own writing and their own work. And that is an improvement that they've been asking for. I don't know how the details of that works because I don't think the contract or the actual deal has been released. But the other thing that the writers have been asking for that studios haven't budged on yet is that their writing can't be used to train AI, or that somehow it should be regulated how it's used to train AI. And studios haven't budged on that at all. And I think that's the next big issue that they're going to have to address there.
Yeah, it's going to be, we're going to see a series of precedents set in the next 5 years around these large language models and how they're used, right?
Absolutely.
So many different like court cases kind of winding through and fights happening like this one right now. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it all shakes out. I think that I wouldn't say that AI is as hyped as like crypto was, but I think it is being oversold quite a bit.
And I mean, it's permeating through all kinds of industries, like even just in what we've talked about now, it's in entertainment, it's in the writers, it's in the actor strike. It's also in Amazon,
like, yeah,
you know, monitoring and improving, you know, monitoring on drivers. They're going to start implementing better robotics in the logistics industry to kind of probably speed up the process. Probably it's not going to work very well, but people are investing in AI in all sorts of fields, and just seeing how this precedent is set, I feel like is going to set us, depending on how it works, on a different course for how AI can be used in the workplace.
I agree. So why do you think all of this stuff is happening right now? Why do you think labor is in the air? Why so many strikes and talks of strikes and so much organization? Why is this happening?
I feel like it really goes back to, at the very least, last year was one of the highest surges that we saw in filings to have a union election in a very long time. I think those petitions to hold a union election were up 53% year over year, which was a really, really big jump from, you know, the kind of stagnant low numbers we've seen there before. And I had asked around about this a couple months ago. I think there are three main points as to why we're getting such a surge in labor right now. The first one, everyone's favorite, COVID. Hear me out. Because COVID really, I feel like, made a lot of people realize that the conditions that they were under, whether they were considered essential workers and they were having to go in and that causes a lot of safety concerns, or whether they got laid off all of a sudden and realized that their jobs weren't as protected as they thought they would be, that really set everything on a whole new path. And I feel like that kind of was the spark for people to realize that there is some way of getting their employers to treat them better. The other two things that are helping with this process is that for a very long time, and I think still right now, we have a fairly tight labor market, which means that workers can demand more from their employers because employers, generally speaking, can't afford to lose them. And the third thing is that Biden is in the White House. I have mixed feelings about Biden that I'm not going to get into on this podcast, but his National Labor Relations Board has been very, very pro-worker. They just passed a new system for what it means for a union to be recognized that requires that if an employer does any sort of unfair persuasion during a union election, that election doesn't have to be redone or anything, and the employer is just required to recognize the union. That's not something that we've seen since maybe the 1940s, that kind of worker power, and that came directly from the NLRB. They've also been going after specific companies. There was the unionization at Amazon that happened last April 2022, I believe, was the JFK8 unionization. That's the Amazon labor union. And since then, that union has been trying to get Amazon to bargain with them for now over a year, even though they received certification, even though a federal judge told Amazon to stop firing people who had unionized. That says enough in itself. But the NLRB issued a complaint against Amazon for refusing to bargain with that union. And the fact that they're taking such a direct approach, I feel like, is really exemplary of the kind of stance that they're taking, the pro-worker stance that they're taking, because that generally does depend on who is in the White House. In Republican administrations, it tends to be more pro-company, and in Democratic administrations, generally speaking, it tends to be more pro-worker. And the fact that this is the political climate that we were in that set up the NLRB has really pushed those successful unionizations forward.
Jules Roscoe, thank you for coming on to Cyber and walking us through this.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Cyber listeners, thank you for joining us. If you like the show, please, and you're listening to the podcast, please consider watching us. We tape these live on twitch.tv/vice. We are on most Fridays at 11 a.m. Next Friday, we are taking a break as we are moving house a little bit, but we will be back. September is going to be absolutely packed. Cory Doctorow is coming back to talk about his new book. We're going to get really deep into inshittification. Taylor Lorenz is going to be coming on. She's going to be talking to us about what it's like to live online. And Brian Merchant is going to come on and talk about the origins of the tech rebellion and Luddites and why we think of the Luddites perhaps incorrectly. Those three shows are all happening in September. They're going to be absolutely incredible, and they're going to be live streamed here at twitch.tv/vice and available as a podcast later. Jules, where can people find your work or follow you online?
I am on Twitter at Jules A. Roscoe. You can find my stuff on vice.com, Motherboard. Just Google me. I'm around. Happy Labor Day, because that's happening this Monday. So perfect timing.
Absolutely.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.